I'd like to extend a really warm welcome to my podcast series on what I'm calling stressing values. I'm trying to find out more about the stress of running a business, but also about the values that help you get through that and how you help navigate difficult issues and motivate the staff.
Yep, sounds good.
That's kind of the premise of the series. But just so the listeners can get a bit more about yourself, could you kick us off by telling us a bit about Jack Rumble and what your business is?
Yeah, so I'm Jack Rumble, I'm CEO of Havio. We are a health and safety consultancy. We operate in London. Our offices are in Farringdon. We've been running since 2009 as a separate entity. We bought the business out, me and my then business partner, from a from an insurance brokerage where we looked after sort of their existing client base. And we grew it from that point onwards, from the two of us in the garage. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but that was true.
Actually in the garage?
We were in the garage and it got, I think we moved in there in about July, so it was fine. The garage was good. Got to about October and we thought, bugger this, it's too cold. And I think
fingers are frozen.
Yeah, one of the computers actually packed in working. So then we got a little office down in Croydon, and we just grew it from there really. And we there was a, you know, I think a lot of people say there's this grand plan and there's this strategy behind it, but there really wasn't. It was just two people trying to make money and trying to do well for their clients to go forward. And then we sort of rode the crest of the wave as we were coming out of the financial crisis. We bought the business out in kind of not the height, because we bought it in July 2009. We knew that construction was on the floor, which had been a main part of our business.
Yes, of course.
But it basically started opening up beautifully from about 2011 2012, and we really just rode that wave and got some really good contracts, and then from that came needing to get staff, and then it just sort of grew from there. So yeah, essentially what we do in a nutshell: health and safety consultancy for all kinds of industries. About 75% of our business is construction, so real high risk. That's my background, is in demolition, waste, construction. I love that kind of high risk nature. That's always been sort of my area of specialism. But as I developed, I also developed a specialism in fire safety, which has then become even more to the fore post, you know, the tragic events in Grenfell in 2017 and everything else.
Yes, of course. Yes, that's made a massive difference, hasn't it, to the construction industry?
It's huge, but it's only really just rippling in now into the Building Safety Act, which has been sort of just passed about a year ago or so. It's now really starting to find its feet after, you know, from the inquiry and everything else. So, yeah, it's moving in the right direction. But, you know, the health and safety industry has got a funny reputation. You know, it's not the most sexy of subjects, but it's very important all the same. But there's you know, there's a lot of people out there who are just happy to go through the motions, tick the box, and, you know, just give someone a bit of documentation which covers their backside, or they think it covers their backside, and, you know, jobs are good. And where I've always regaled against that and said, look, if it's not actually making it any safer for the people that we're consulting for, then what's the point in doing it in the first place? So we have a different approach to health and safety. I'm not saying there's no one else who does it like us. I'm not saying we've got some special sauce or anything like that. But yeah, that's essentially what we do as a business: health and safety consultancy for SME businesses and some very large businesses as well. But our bread and butter is those clients sort of who have got 50 to 100 employees. It's that kind of
thing. Yes, okay. The relatively, well, in this game, they're quite big organisations, actually, in construction. I'd have thought that sort of size, but relatively small.
Yeah.
But it seems like you are trying to challenge that standard approach that most business owners watching this will be very familiar with, that they've got to go through this fairly mundane, fairly bureaucratic box-ticking process. In my experience, hasn't made me feel much safer. I felt more compliant. So how do you differentiate?
Okay, so I mean, look, our company vision is to challenge the perceptions of the health and safety industry, and by doing that, we treat people as the solution, which I know sounds a bit cliche and sort of strapliney.
Yeah.
But a lot of what we tend to have done is we create rules to get the behaviors that we want, forgetting that the fact that we're dealing with human beings who are also different in terms of what drives them and their risk appetites and everything else. So, and this is not just health and safety, right? In life, we try and put people in boxes and expect them to act in a certain way and then wonder why they don't behave in that way. And I don't think that the industry, let's say construction industry, has treated people as individuals enough. And then, you know, it's coming home to roost in some of the behaviors that they're getting. So for us, it's all about trying to create, you know, you can't have bespoke systems created for every single individual person.
No.
But you can try and create behavioral safety models, which is to get people, which is you empower people to take responsibility for their own health and safety because they want to, not because they're told to, because human beings are curious creatures. One of the key things human beings don't like being told is what to do.
Yeah.
So why would we as health and safety practitioners go in there and say to somebody, you're not doing that right, you need to do this. Oh, why do you need to do this? Because that's the rules. Well, there's a parent-child dynamic going on there regardless, so that's never going to go down well. And ultimately, the most successful way for me, and this just comes naturally to me, we have to teach this into people when they join us, is that, you know, you work with people, and if you empower people and give them responsibility to come up with their own actions, they're more likely to follow through. And that doesn't run counter to what the health and safety industry. There's some really, really big players in our industry who provide people with every bit of documentation under the sun. They think it looks compliant. There's lots of online forms here and all this kind of stuff. Now, it's just paperwork for paperwork's sake. It makes it no safer whatsoever. And actually, the company feels like they're buying protection. And the hard bit for me is when I go in and see these companies is to try and make it not sound like I'm trying to get one over on my competitors. But what I'm saying is that documentation, in some cases, is actually even putting you under even more of a close eye if something goes wrong, because you're signing yourself up to saying you're doing X, Y, Z. When truth be told, one, you don't need to do all of that. And two, you're never going to do it. So you might as well just make sure you spend a bit of more time and maybe a bit more money up front, but it will save you in the long run. And that's where we come in. We come in as a hands-on provider rather than that tick box compliance provider. And obviously there's a cost implication to that, but I would say it saves companies money in the long run.
I was, as you were describing that, I was thinking that does sound more intensive.
It is.
From your point of view and from the client perspective.
Yeah.
So how going, because obviously every business is now increasingly cost conscious. Everyone's of trying course. To automate, digitize, cut costs out in some way or other. So with your model in mind and your values in mind, what do you want to do with the business over the next 5 years? Where do you want to take it?
Okay, so the next 5 years in terms of, so there's a company side to this and there's a personal side to this. So in terms of where I want to take the company is current, we're a provider that will travel nationwide, I would say. That's where we currently are. I want us to be a nationwide provider, but we will only do that by having an internal resourced full-time employees or part-time, but we don't have too many subcontractors. So I know that there's easier ways to make money is that you have no overheads. You basically have one or two people in an office and then you have a network of sub-consultants. But that doesn't give us what I've just described before, which is in how I want it to be delivered. So I want us to be a nationwide provider, but with full-time resource. I want us to be, you know, I'm not interested in being the biggest, being the number one, all these sort of ego-driven sort of strap lines, I suppose. Ultimately, for me, it's running a business that I can be proud of, that people who work within it can be proud of, that develop people in line with, you know, we've got a great responsibility to a lot of people who come in at their younger years within our business and we develop them on. So, you know, and I'm not just saying this from an altruistic place, because it's good for us as well. If we take people on and we get three, four good years out of them at the beginning of their career and we put all of the effort into them and train them, you know, we get that, they get a lot from us, and, you know, then they can go on to the dizzy heights and, you know, get, you know, potential paychecks that we can't move to. But so in terms of, you know, progression going forward, I don't have this big North Star saying, this is, we must do this number. We must be turning over 5 million a year with 20% net profit or whatever it might be, because I know that for me personally, it's not about that. I would also like to have members of staff who are more bought into the company. And when I say bought in, I mean from not just a you know, an employee perspective. So I'm looking at potential employee, you know, I'm very, very clear in terms of how we must operate and how we must operate in line with the values. But as a person, I'm quite comfortable with not, with knowing that the future is uncertain. So there's no point making all these grand plans, because more often than not, something comes in the middle of it and grinds it to a screeching halt. Let's just say COVID in 2020.
We've had enough of these things, haven't we, in the last 10 years? Yes.
And, you know, then, you know, now we've got, you know, we've got, you know, inflation that has been going through the roof. I know it's come down recently, and all these shocks and things. And truth be told, I haven't got a crystal ball, obviously, but I don't see it changing much. We're in a moment in time and a period of time with mass disruption, and, you know, with AI coming in, with all this, that no one really knows what the future holds. But I'm pretty confident that the future of our industry does not look anything like it does now. And I think the rate of getting to that point is going to happen far quicker than people realize. And I think we're sort of like frogs in the pan at the moment, not quite realizing that we're being boiled.
I suspect there's quite a few people from who are watching this will be thinking exactly the same. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So I picked out from that you want to get sort of a national coverage.
Yeah.
But you want to keep a retained employed team.
Yeah.
So what are the big challenges you're going to have to overcome in order to get yourself there? What's
people?
it's
the number one. It's the number one challenge at the moment. I put a post out on LinkedIn this morning with it was just a picture of tumbleweed, and it was like, does this picture ring true? This is my viewpoint at the moment on the current health and safety market in terms of candidate supply, because we need at this moment in time 4/5 people in our business.
Wow.
And the old me 5 years ago would have just gone and filled it. Now I'm saying, we're not doing that. We're not making that mistake again, because it catches up with you in the end. We are just going to ride this out. And if we can pick up one or two people along the way, but ultimately at the moment, the market is a little bit stuck in our market. I think people are a little bit nervous about jumping ship and going to another employer, which I understand. Or people are moving for different reasons. And potentially, I've always said that we're not the highest payers in the market. In terms of a candidate supply market, we already reduce it. And then the way that we recruit, which I might come on to explain a little bit later, we minimize it even more. So I have to be realistic that I sometimes have ambitions that I'm not prepared to compromise on certain elements, like people, like employing on character rather than technical. And that might be my biggest challenge, which is not to do that. And someone could try and convince me any which way that I need to lower my standards or need to go at things a little bit differently or get contractors in or do this, do that. And I would say to them, no, I'd prefer to run my business in a different way, earn less profit, but still have something that I'm proud to do. And that's just the difference when you're not money motivated. I'm not saying it's not important. It absolutely is. Totally. But it doesn't drive me. I'm driven by purpose and by values. I can kind of take a more long-term look on things, because I'm not looking at that short-term, I must do this number because of X, Y, Z. And that's a fortunate position to be in, but one I've worked very hard to get to.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You need to have some level of comfort before you can really hold on to that. Yeah.
So people is the biggest thing.
Yes.
What other challenges would I say? It's going to come. The technology, which we're already quite forward thinking in how we approach things anyway. We've got developed our own software, all this kind of stuff. But the market is going to change exponentially because of AI. Now, I'm not any expert in it. I've got a fair understanding of it from doing quite a lot of reading on it. But the construction industry, for instance, which is 20 years behind most other industries, let's not forget. But everyone at this moment in time is going, I don't know how it's going to work. You know, you can't build a wall with AI. You can't do this. But, you know, I know there's technologies out there, potentially out there, which, you know, in terms of in construction products, which could totally change the face of, you know, how we build houses, because there's these systems in place, new bricks that have got all the thermal valuations, got everything that don't require any of the internal, you know, plasterboard, all that. So there's all these different things that is inevitably it's going to change the way we do things. And I think sometimes we lazily just say AI, not really knowing what we're talking about with it. But technology is going to disrupt the industry, I think, for the better. I'm quite an optimist with regards to any of this, but it will naturally cause mass confusion along the way. That's the big challenge. And the big challenge we also always have is the perception of the industry we do, right? You know, health and safety. You tell people what you do, health and safety, and they look at you like, God, why would you do that? You know, you know, they've got pictures in their head about, you know, the Daily Mail and councils banning people hanging floral baskets from the roof because they can't water them, or
cutting down conkers
in the playground.
Yes,
and
all that.
I see it as a duty to try and show people that that's not the way that we do things. You know, we look at risk objectively and we come up with solutions. The industry has not done itself any favors because it's got lots of people in it who are problem identifiers. They're not solutions finders. And they have a very negative sort of approach to things. And some people are very risk averse. So what they do is they come up with the solutions, which is like the, you know, belts and braces,
belts
when it
braces,
doesn't need to be that. Because what they worry about is if they don't say something and something goes wrong, their neck's on the block. And as a business owner of a health and safety consultancy, I say to my team, look, it's ultimately my neck's on the block here. It's going to be me.
You are taking the risk.
It's going to be me taking the risk. And I would prefer you to think from a health and safety perspective, but health and safety regulations aren't black and white, despite what a lot of people think. There's something called reasonably practicable, which allows you to weigh up the risk and the cost and come up with a control measure, which causes quite a lot of people some issues. But I'm always saying, you know, be bold, be brave. Think about the commercial aspect. If you're with a client and you recommend something that's going to cost them 200 grand, there might be another solution that could cost them 100 grand. And back in, this comes back into your thing earlier about how do we, about being intensive with clients, and it might seem like a bigger upfront cost. Our job at the start is to get people to understand, without driving fear into them, that by following our approach might actually save them more money in the long run because of X, Y, Z. And it's the holy grail of health and safety is if that, what, you know, there's the legal, the moral, and the reputational and financial sort of conundrum in there. But if you can, no one can really ever prove this bit though, and this is, if someone does, they're going to be very successful, is if you can implement good health and safety standards and improve the culture within your business, your people will be more productive, they'll be happier, they'll obviously then do more, you'll have less work and time off, and you'll have, it will actually improve the bottom line. A lot of people say it, they can't back it up with facts. So then people in senior board positions rip them apart on it and say, well, that sounds lovely and frilly. Give me the hard evidence that you've actually managed to do that. Show us. And that's, you know, that's part of the puzzle that we look to solve with our clients when we get in front of them.
Right. So that's an interesting set of challenges: the people, the technology blend.
Yeah.
And of course that background reputational issue of the whole sector that you're in. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, and I noticed that, you know, you've already referenced it, the values that you drive this business by, which seem to, in my way of thinking, address, well, certainly two, if not all three of those major challenges. And certainly, well, describe the values that you drive the business to. I mean, you've already referenced them.
Yeah. So look, when I talk about values, I bring mission, vision, values. They're probably the three most important things within our business. So our company mission is quite simple. It's not trying to be too complex. It's to empower people to maintain safe and healthy places of work. So the key word in there is empower.
Yes.
The vision is to challenge the perception of the industry by treating people as the solution. So there's a theme here, people. The values, I'm absolutely cast iron on the values, and nothing, you know, in the past, I had eight values all ending in activity, which, you know, objectivity, adaptability, all these slogans that was created by someone in a marketing department. Absolute,
yes,
excuse my language, but absolute crap, right? That we didn't follow. I looked at them and said, I'm not living and breathing these. I don't even know what half of them mean. So I was like, let's simplify this. Let's do an exercise. What, and I keep pointing to my heart here because that's how I'm a heart-driven person. What, where am I at? What means the most to me? And then let's get the team involved and let's see what they say. And we then look at it and we was like, okay, what is this transcendent purpose that permeates across our business? Well, the transcendent purpose is to care for people. And so I was like, well, okay, well, the first value has to be caring, because at the heart of it, that's what we do. Now, some people mistake that for, oh, you must be all fluffy and happy clappy and everyone just gets along and it's a caring. And I'm like, no. And one of the most caring things you can do for someone sometimes is to shine a light and confront them in a gentle way on something that they might not be doing correctly, or somewhere, or you know, you might think that they need to approach stuff in a different way. And it might even be, in the long run, the most caring thing for somebody is to have an open and honest conversation and say, do you know what? I don't think this position's for you. I won't go into the details, but I had one this week where we had to let somebody leave the business. Then we have an interesting one, friendship and trust. Now, for me, again, there'll be a theme building here.
Mm.
In companies, I think that, especially senior managers, you're told not to get too close to people, you know, don't be friends with people. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
Very consistent advice. Don't get too close to people. Yes.
I'm like, I don't agree in that. There's boundaries. Yes. Let people know where they stand. Yes. But why can't, let's take me, why can't I be friends with my head of consultancy services, Lindsay, for instance? Why can't I be friends with her? As long as we know that there's a business relationship here, you can still be friends. And this is backed up by data. If you've got friends within a company, you're more likely to be motivated and you're more likely to stay longer within a company if you've got actual real friends within an organization.
Yeah, because you want to help your friends. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that needs trust with it as well. And I've always been an open book and been very transparent. And I said, look, I will always be open with you. I'll always be honest. Obviously, there's certain things I can't divulge to everyone and I wouldn't dream of doing, but people know where they stand. So, you know, that's another driving force behind our business. That's not to say every single person in the organization wants to go out for a beer with everyone. You know, there's going to be characters who naturally migrate more towards each other and whatever. But, you know, you've got that caringness, friendship and trust. Then for me, which is really important, grounded, which is another word for essentially being humble, which is that I've got no time in my business for anyone who thinks they're any better than anyone else. And I include myself in that. No one on this planet is any better than anyone else. We're all the same. We come from the same place. We'll go to the same place when we're done. And just because one of us might climb higher up the corporate structure, you're no better or no worse than the other person who might just be starting out. And so for me, we're very, very good at this at the recruitment stage, in asking those questions on all of these values, really, but that one in particular, I've got a very good detector for somebody who thinks they're a little bit special or a little bit above someone.
Oh, right.
And I won't have it. So that is really important to me. That doesn't mean you can't be confident and you can't back yourself and you've got, you know,
there's a difference, isn't there? Yeah.
I'm very confident in my ability. I'm also very aware of where I'm not so strong at, you know, and you can have those conversations. And then the last one is freedom. You know, who was it? Daniel Pink, I think, in his motivation theory, was very clear that micromanaging people is more of a failure on the part of the person doing the micromanaging than it is on the other person. And it does not get the best out of people in the long run. If you ask anyone in interview processes, which I do week on week, you know, tell us what won't get the best out of you, more often than not, it's micromanaging. So then you need to have a structure in place and be able to measure people on outputs and all the rest of it, which allows you to say, okay, I don't need to micromanage you because I'll soon know if something's not going right. And if it's not, we'll intervene and we'll have a discussion.
Well, that's a really good point. I'm really pleased you said that because I think I talk a lot about values with my clients.
Mm.
And the pushback is, well, how do you manage values? How do you know they're happening? You know, I can see my bottom line. I can see all, you know, projects happening in front of me, physical evidence. But how do I do that? So perhaps you can help our watchers to understand, you know, how do you actually make sure these values come to life? How do you bring your team with you?
Okay, well, so, I mean, the whole team, well, it's there's a lot of constant repetition. There's a lot of performance reviews, that any appraisals, that kind of stuff. The values are front and center. Anytime I discuss with the team in like a group setting, we always bring things back to the values. If anyone looks at Javio and myself on LinkedIn, you'll see that I constantly bring things back to values. We don't have them on the wall. It's not one of those ones.
Oh, right.
But, you know, it's not that in your face. I'm a great believer in actions speak louder than words. And it's about, you know, it's about demonstrating it through action, not through talking. So if I'm talking too much about it and I'm constantly ramming it down people's throats, then the likelihood is it's not being shown in action. So there is another thing here which you touch on, which is you can see profit on the bottom line. You can see I'm a massive empath and feeler anyway. You can just sometimes feel when the actions, when the values are being demonstrated, and you can feel when they're not, and you can obviously see things. So if I drop in on a meeting with one of my team, let's say an operational meeting that happens every Monday, and I, for instance, hear someone talking about, you know, a member of staff and saying, oh, they've not done this, or, you know, I can sort of get a sense if there's, you know, are they coming in from an understanding and a caring perspective, or are they going into judgment mode? And are they, you know, starting to talk? And then if that happens, you nip it in the bud. This is the thing with values, in my opinion, just the way I do things. They're everything to me. So we hire based on them. We reward based on them. And, you know, some people will call it fire, but I don't like that word. We will let people go if they don't uphold the values. And we are absolutely stringent on that. So, and this is where a lot of people, I think, go wrong with values, is they're there when they suit your agenda, they're put out there. When they don't, oh, well, this person, like, for instance, this person makes me loads of money. They're a brilliant performer, but you know what? They're a bit of a toxic manager. Well, for me, that person wouldn't be in the, I don't care how much money they make me, they wouldn't be anywhere near my business because I wouldn't have them. And I've learned the hard way. And that is the key. No one is more important than a team, regardless of what they can do for you. And yeah, so that's how we do it. And a crucial part of it is the recruitment phase. So this is where I touched on earlier that you've got to be very careful about who you let into the business, because one wrong person can absolutely, you know, it can just turn the company upside down overnight. So we've got a very, very robust process in terms of finding those right characters to join the business. And we do personality profiling. We talk about that with my non-exec director, Danny, and every first interview is always with me and him. And we're very good at detecting the right fits for our business and the people who aren't the right fit. It's not to say they're not a good person. It's just to say they're not right for us and how we operate. But that's taken years to craft. And even now, one's slipped through the net, you know, and it's we're dealing with people. So you're never going to get them all right. However good your process is, you're dealing with human beings and you're never going to get 100% of the decisions right.
No, so you described the recruitment process, and I think that's very powerful to recruit on the values and for you to be so upfront in the process yourself.
Yeah.
And then you were talking about the sort of KPIs and the rewards that you offer by values. So you must have a way of measuring their adherence to the values in terms of specifying what level of reward they get. Is it?
Yeah.
But, so how do you do that?
But yeah, we do, but it's not scientific. And this is some people. I'm not a great lover of KPIs, if I'm being honest. So you're probably speaking to the wrong person here. There, I go on feeling, and my leadership style is to walk the decks, and I'll see what's going on, and I'll poke my nose in here, and I'll go out with this person there. And I'll say, tell me about, you know, tell me what's going on. You pick up little snippets, you'll see it. And if Lindsay's my head of consultancy services and she's managing the team, and I suddenly see that there's, you know, two or three people that are, you know, lagging, aren't doing what they were meant to do in terms of their objectives and everything else. Well, I'm not going to go and blame them. I'm going to go and look at Lindsay and I'm going to say, okay, well, just talk me through this. What are you doing with them? How are we doing it? And then I'll go and talk to the people. And I've got a very open and honest way of doing things, but I lead through action and going and seeing things. I just get out there and amongst it, if I'm being honest, not as much as I would like to. It's something one of my key objectives for the next 3 months is to do it far more, because it's one of those things that when you get busy, sometimes falls by the wayside. And as I've built a structure within the business, I've got people who do that for me. So sometimes it's not as pressing.
Going to ask you that. How do you manage your time? Because that's the bit that everyone says is, you know, getting out into the business once the business gets growing is very hard. You haven't got time. There's all this other stuff going on, clients, money, you know, whatever.
Okay. Well, I always find this question curious. Now, look, my business isn't massive. I've got 17 people in it, and we need to get it to about 2022. So it's not like I'm a CEO of a company employing 1,500 people, right? So that's the first thing to say. But I see a CEO's role quite simply, and I see it, and I wear a few more hats being a small business owner, but I see the CEO's role as the most important thing is to make sure that the culture is where you want it to be, in line with your values, that you recruit the right people and get the right bums on seats, and then get out of their way and let them do the job. And if they're not doing something in line with how you want it to do, you have those open and honest conversations. And then ensuring that the bottom line and the profit is where it needs to be. A CEO, I don't think, should be doing much more than those three things, in my opinion. Now, I have a few more hats. I'm very heavily involved in marketing, because that's a big passion area and an area of expertise for me. But essentially, that's what I see. So I find my time reasonably easy to manage. But then I've built up over time a structure to allow that to happen. So I've got a senior management team that's able to now probably have double the amount of consultants that we currently have, because I've done it early. So I've got Kev, who's my COO. I'm a visionary, let's say, creative type. I'm not your process man. I'm not your man who's going to, you know, get that all implemented and think about all the conceivable details. I don't go into it in that level. Kev is that person to bring my reality, to bring my vision into reality. Now, it took me ages to find Kev, but I have, and we work very well together. We are complete opposites. Like, I could not tell you how different we are. But it works, yin and yang and all that. And then Lindsay has worked her way up the business, but she's more aligned with me in terms of she's more emotional, wears her heart on her sleeve. She'll lead from the front in terms of that with people. And that's who I think, for me, from the values perspective, is essential. I couldn't have somebody who isn't in line with who hasn't got in touch with their emotions and doesn't have a very high EQ managing the team of people, because you basically have me talking like I'm talking now on this podcast. Yeah. And then suddenly someone delivering it completely differently. So it's like, well, doesn't add up here. So that took me a long time to find. But I knew Lindsay was that person. So we basically built her up to get to that position, which took probably 3 years. And then I've got my wife, Sarah, who runs the financial side of the business, who's very numbers driven, very process driven again. So it's about building the team and senior management team, which, if I'm being honest, then allows me to kind of do what I want within the business and float around.
This is really interesting area, because this is, I think we're touching something that is kind of magic sauce, really.
Yeah.
Because so many people I work with haven't been able to delegate and to find people to cover off these big elements, the big tasks. And so they're still finding themselves stretched across the whole business. And everyone says to me, how can I find that person? How can I find someone I can trust at that level? So can you comment a bit on that word trust? How do you build that?
I think there's a few things in there. There's the first thing you've got to be prepared to do is put your money where your mouth is and go and recruit people at the right level, right? So there's a lot of business owners that will say, I could look at my senior management team and I could say, I could do without, let's say I can't, but like the Kev person, and I could save myself X amount and I'll do all the jobs. So it's like, well, no, I'd prefer to earn less profit and I'd prefer to have my life set up in a way that allows me to have a bit of balance in it. So putting your money where your mouth is and putting the money aside to get someone of that caliber. And then it's having somebody, and I'm a great believer in having, as a business owner, we can work in echo chambers where we don't have anyone to bounce stuff off. Or it's groupthink within an organization where you're all basically not trying to upset each other and talk. So I've got Danny McGuigan, Dr. Danny McGuigan, who's my non-exec director. And he's been so instrumental in the change in my business in the last 2 years. He got me to think more in this way, because I am that, what you were describing there as then business owners who weren't prepared to delegate, thought they could do everything better, were attached to things they couldn't let go. That was me.
Okay.
That was me. And, you know, there are elements that I know in the business, not being arrogant, there are elements that I know that no one can do better than me. But do I let them go because I know that someone could do it 90, 95%? Yeah. So it's all about, you can't do everything in life. You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't have a happy, balanced life and a family life and a business that works and all of these things if you're going to just hold on to everything. So my advice would be for people to work with somebody, business owners, to work with a coach, a non-exec director, whatever it is, but someone who's prepared to give them honest feedback that they might not be prepared to hear. And Danny, for me, he's a close friend now, but we've worked at the personal level on me as a person first, rather than me as the CEO. And it's changed my life. I'm not even going to butter it up any other way. He has given me so much confidence to be able to do that. And of course, there's so many people out there who can do that. It's about finding that right character for you.
The chemistry for you. Yes. Yeah.
That's the key. Cause I went through two or three people before.
So at some point you're holding all the balls, juggling everything.
Yeah.
And then you meet Danny.
Yeah.
And you make the decision, okay, I've got to break out of this. You put the resources aside. Yep. Right. And this is really good stuff. But then you've still got to make that leap, haven't you? Leap of trust.
Yeah. And be prepared to make mistakes and be prepared for things to go wrong. How did you
get prepared? Because you weren't prepared. Now you're saying,
I wasn't prepared, but then I thought, do you know what? If I'm ever going to get there, if I'm ever going to want this life that I'm trying to build for myself in terms of being able to follow other pursuits, because I've got so many other pursuits outside of health and safety, some philanthropic, some money oriented, that kind of stuff, I'm never going to get there without taking a leap of faith. So once I had a bit more structure around me and we had to restructure the business, I went through a buyout of the business where I had to change things. Once I'd done that, it was then getting everyone in place and well set up, but not being a perfectionist with it, because if you're a perfectionist with it, you're never going, you won't grow in the way that you need to. So I know it's cliched stuff, but don't sweat the small stuff. Have those two or three non-negotiables, which one of them for me is the values.
Yes.
There's other ones. And it's, if you have your non-negotiables that you're not prepared to renege on, then other stuff is like, okay, well, look, let that person take the reins. Monitor them. Don't just go suddenly delegate overnight and then just leave it.
Don't abdicate. Delegate. You know,
abdicate your responsibility. Mm. And that for me is how I've done it. But I'm prepared. I've never been as scared of failure and making mistakes. And I'll own all of my mistakes. And one of my key strengths in life is being able to take responsibility.
Yes. So you recruit people, realize that that's not right necessarily.
Yeah. And then communicate. Like I say to my team, if you're expecting me as the leader of this company to have all the answers to everything that you want, you're in the wrong place. I said, because that person doesn't exist in this business. And I'll tell you one thing, that person doesn't exist in any business.
No, they don't exist.
They don't exist. So stop trying to, so let's not beat around the bush here. I'm fallible, just like all of you guys. I'm vulnerable. And I think that's one of the key things as it's coming, as we're talking now. I'm prepared to be vulnerable and I'm prepared to open up to my team and tell them that I don't have the answers, but say, do you know what? I might not have all the answers, but if we come up against the challenge, I know for a fact that I'm the right person to lead us through the choppy waters to get us to that point. Yeah. And that's, you know, and that can be done, you know, you get the right people behind you, you get the right outside advice, whatever you need, and you go forward. And that's how I've done it. I'm not saying it's been plain sailing at all. It hasn't.
No, absolutely. None of that is plain sailing, but you certainly demonstrated the sort of adherence to the values. You believe them and you've brought them to life in the business, you know, in multiple ways, particularly in this process of delegating at a senior level. I think that's really important. Well, we're kind of getting close to the end, and I suppose for quite a few people will be watching this thinking, how can I start a business like this? So what would you say to an aspiring business person who wants to set up, probably in your sector, follow your lead?
Well, I would say you need to be brave. You need to be brave because, you know, it's not an easy path. This has taken me 15 years to get the business to this point. I have made every mistake under the sun, and I've had not sleepless nights. I think that's a throwaway line. I haven't had sleepless nights. I've had disrupted sleep. I've had some very many challenges when people leave and you think, oh God, it's all coming back to me. And so you need to be brave and you need to be prepared to accept that you're going to have to work hours which aren't going to be always sociable. And you're going to need to have a partner and a family that's going to be able to support that. You're going to need to work really, really hard. There's no quick fix to this, really. What else? What I would say is, I think a lot of people, when they start out, it's about just getting the money in the door. And that's not to be dismissed at all, because it is about that. And you need to get cash flow going. Cash is king. So cash flow is very, very important. Don't forget the marketing side of stuff. For me, the marketing is something that sometimes people think is that thing when you get established, you can start worrying about marketing.
Yeah, the fluffy marketing. Yeah.
For me, that's the wrong way around. You should look at, you know, there's a lot of people out there trying to be influencers, right? In health and safety, let's not try and be a health and safety influencer. But you are going to have something called a personal brand. And it's about being that person, but don't put on a facade. Don't try and be someone that you're not, because you'll get found out.
You will get found out.
And so it's about being authentic. So I would say, be authentic, be prepared to work hard, and keep in mind, cash is king.
Cash is king. Yeah, I don't think you could end on a better note. It certainly is. Brilliant. Jack, I've so enjoyed that. You've brought so much of what I've been thinking about to life, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Colin.